So now back we go to the 18th century. Robert Glenister and Richard Pearse share the role of John Trenchard, who's about to find himself drawn into a dangerous world of smuggling, subterranean tombs and secret messages in J. Meade Faulkner's Moonfleet.
I remember when I lay as a boy twixt sleep and waking in the little whitewashed bedroom at my aunt's, hearing the awful roar of the undertow sucking back the pebbles on Moonfleet Beach. Then I thought of vessels driven into the bay and poor souls fighting for their lives against that sea. The talk would run through Moonfleet that there was a ship could not weather the snout and must come ashore. Half the village would be gathered on the beach, with the men ready to risk their lives for others, yet anxious not to lose their chance of booty too. Moonfleet by J. Meade Faulkner. Dramatised for radio by Nick Warburton. There were nights when the bay was calm, and other vessels put into Moonfleet, and men and horses would gather on the beach to meet the boats, and take off barrels into the dark. Silent work, unless the revenue heard tell of it. As they did in the June of 1757, a catch in Moonfleet Bay. A boy of 15 among the men. Not me, one David Block, who looks out and sees a schooner Elector following them. People said it was Magistrate Maskew who put the revenue men on their track. And surely, he was on board the Elector that night.
Smugglers! In the name of the King, give yourselves up! In the name of the King, give yourselves up!
It was late one evening in the October of that year that I found Master Ratsey, the sexton, at work lettering a tombstone.
Master Ratsey?
John Trenchard. Here, hold the lantern for me.
Right.
Just got half hour's job to get all finished. See the carving at the top here? A schooner boarding a catch. It's good work, no?
Aye, Master Ratsey. Stone's for David, is it?
For David, yes. The verses of Mr. Glennis.
Sacred to the memory of David Block, age 15. Of life bereft by fell design, I mingle with my fellow clay. On God's protection I recline, to save me in the judgment day. There too must you, cruel man, appear. He means Mr. Maskew?
Aye. 'Twas a cruel, cruel thing, John, to fire on so young a lad. No distance between them, and full in the face. And the poor fellows taken on that night, they say three of them will surely hang at the next assize. Well, when this work's done, you and I shall go to the Why Not for a glass of arrack milk to keep out the autumn chill.
To the inn? I don't know. If Aunt Jane should hear of it...
How will she hear? I shan't tell her.
And else of it. I mean, Master Block is the innkeeper. And he seems so grim.
Aye, and grimmer and sadder 1,000 times since David's death. So he needs the talk of kindly friends to cheer him. You need not fear, Elzevir Block, boy. There never was a truer man in Moonfleet.
Ratsey loved a glass of good liquor well, and with him, 'twas always the same reasoning. to keep off chills, autumn, winter, spring or summer. My heart was in my mouth when he led me into the wine-up. I thought it a vast honor to be asked there. Yet my pleasure was not without alloy.
Don't look so ill at ease, John. Aunt Jane won't come looking for you here.
No, Master Ratsey.
Elzevir Block was sitting by the chimney, smoking a long pipe and looking into the fire. A man of 50 with a shock of grizzled hair, thick-set and immensely strong.
You see over the fireplace, look? The calf shear with that black Y on it. You seen that before?
I have. The arms of the Mahoons.
They owned Moonfleet once, before their fortunes fell. Now all that's left of them is their mark, a Y on a shield. That's how this place got its name. Properly, it's called the Mahoon Arms, but the Y caused folk to name it the Wynart in jest, and the name stuck.
What does this boy want?
The same as me, Elzevir. A glass of Ararat milk to keep off the chill.
Cow's milk's best for children such as he.
John's no child. He's the same age as David and comes from helping me finish the headstone. May the poor lad rest in peace.
Aye. Oh, David rests in peace. 'Tis they that brought him to his end that shall not rest in peace when their time comes. And it may come sooner than they think.
Leave that to Providence, Elzevir. Vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord.
We shall see. Hear that? 'Twill do thee no good, but may do thee no harm.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, rare milk of Ararat. It sets the heart at ease. Now then, leave off thy drinking and fetch the backgammon board for us, will you?
Right.
The backgammon board was old, and round the edge ran an inscription. As in life, so in a game of hazard, skill will make something of the worst of throws. I had cause to remember those words afterwards. Elzevir and Ratsey played on, and I watched.
Ah, my luck's out tonight.
Lad, it's time for thee to go home.
True, John. That aunt of thine is strict.
And men say that Blackbeard walks on the first nights of winter.
Blackbeard?
Aye. Blackbeard. The ghost of Colonel Mahoon. Some have met him face to face twixt this house and thine in the churchyard.
'Tis only talk, though.
Oh, talk, is it? Didst thou not hear a cracky Jones?
A poor mad body found dead in the churchyard. Tell cracky 'tis only talk.
Oh, and Blackbeard is buried in the vault under the church.
Been there a century, John. Yet men still see him by the light of an old-fashioned lantern. Full black beard, coppery face, and such evil eyes that any who meet their gaze, they say, must die within the year. So they see him, searching.
Searching for what?
His treasure, lad. He'll come by.
Worst of all the Mahoons he was. Fought for King Charles in the Civil War, and then took up with the rebels when it suited him better. Parson Glennie will tell you that. When Blackbeard was made governor of Carisbrook Castle, they gave him charge of King Charles himself, see? That's how he came by his treasure.
How?
The king had about him a great diamond, and Blackbeard said he'd wink at an escape if he could have it for himself. But when his majesty was escaping through the window, in comes a file of soldiers. And there's Colonel Mahoon with a good opinion of the rebels at his watchfulness and the diamond safe in his hand.
Not much good it did him, though, living here in seclusion and despised by both parties until his death.
What happened to the diamond?
He hid it. And that's why he's sometimes seen in the churchyard searching.
Well, back you go, John, your Aunt Jane.
Oh, right.
Mind how you tread when you pass the church.
What time do you call this, John Trenchard?
I've been helping Master Ratsey, aunt.
Master Ratsey? I won't have it, John. I do not choose that my nephew should be called a gadabout. Get thee to bed.
But I only...
To bed. Straight.
A few days after this, the wind began to rise in sudden strong gusts, and we knew that bad weather was due. There were wisps of thatch, and even stray tiles flying from the roofs. And so much water piled up in the lagoon that it passed its bounds and flooded all the sea meadows. When day broke, there was the churchyard flooded, and the church itself standing up like a steep little island.
Holy be the Lord, he is God. It is he that made us, and not we ourselves. We are his people, and his sheep are his pasture. Enter into his gates.
That Sunday, we found streamers of seaweed tangled about the very tombstones in the churchyard.
The Lord is good, his mercy is everlasting, and his truth endures to all generations.
Mr. Ramsey, Elsevier's come to church, look.
Any man may come to hear the word of God, John.
But he's never been before. They say he's a Catholic, or worse.
Shh, you attend to Mr. Glennie, lad.
All of us here in Moonfleet are familiar with the letter Y, the Y of the Mahumes. In each man's life must come a point where two roads part like the arms of a Y. Each must choose whether to follow the broad and sloping path on the left, or the steep and narrow path.
What was that?
Or the steep and narrow path on the right. The left path represents. The left path represents the easy downward road to destruction.
Master Ratsy, it comes from below the church.
And the right, the narrow upward path of life.
Oh, Lord, how ever can he bide there preaching when the moons be rising from their graves?
Now, please, Mrs. Tuck.
Lord sakes, we shall all be throttled like Cracky Jones. I won't stay here for that.
Come on, then, Mrs. Tuck.
Small congregation today, Ratsy. And smaller still when I'd had my say.
Aye, because the Lord has sent evil angels amongst us, Mr. Glennie.
Fie, Ratsy man. Those sounds were nature's work.
Nature's work?
And floods have filled the vault, John. And the coffins jostle one another.
Well, Master, I'm but a plain man, but I owed it a fond thing to make light of such warnings.
Warnings? You should know better than to fright a boy with such silly talk.
I think it well that heady boys should learn to stand in awe and not pry into what does not concern them, or they may come to harm.
I'm sure he added this for my benefit, though I did not then understand what he meant. It made me shiver to think of the Mahoons jostling one another in the dark, each afloat in a box of rotting wood. And Blackbeard himself in a coffin bigger than all the rest, crashing into the weaker ones, decayed and rotten. Yet how could that be? For here were the coffins tapping against each other as if they were still sound and airtight. Still, I did not doubt Mr. Glennie. For if not coffins, what should it be that made that noise? The following day I returned, meaning to listen outside the church if the Mahoons were still moving. And there were Ratsy and Elsevier Block, and Master Ratsy lying on the ground with his ear to the wall.
Good morning.
John,
what brings you this way, seeking mischief?
I've come to see if the Mahoons are still moving. Are they?
Well, that we can't tell you, can we, Ratsy?
No. We've no time for such idle matters, John.
But you were listening.
Well, not he.
No. I was examining this wall to see if it needs underpinning after the floods. Yes. So get thee back to my workshop, John, and fetch my plasterer's hammer.
Right.
But when I came back with the hammer, Master Ratsy, blushing and out of countenance, said it was not needed. I looked up at Elsevier and saw his eyes twinkle under their heavy brows, and wondered again why he'd come to church.
Run, John Trenchard, run! The school will start without you.
Oh, Mr. Glennie, I'm sorry to be late. I was...
I know. Taking a cut through the man of woods. Oh. Now, be careful, John. Mr. Maskew is stern with lads who use his woods, I believe. Now, get your breath and enter school. I wish to hear what you have learned of Mr. Dryden, remember?
You ran fast, John. But I'm still here before you.
Grace, I didn't see you.
And have you learned the poem? Are we to hear it today?
I think I know it, Grace. I'm glad to see thee here.
I'm always here, John. And always here before you. Come on, Mr. Glenn is waiting.
Grace Maskew was a favourite with us all. Her father, that same man responsible for David's death, was a lawyer by profession. Having made money in Edinburgh, he came south and settled in the manor house. But though we hated him, we never used a railing word against him when Grace was by.
Pleased with the danger, when the waves went high, he sought the storms.
But for a calm unfit.
Would steer too near the sands.
Glennie!
Why, good day to you, Mr. Maskew.
I've just seen, Parson, your handiwork on that young rogue's stone.
Mr. Maskew, I fail to understand.
You know well what I mean. 'Tis a libel, sir. A libel! Grace! Get your cape and come with me. Come with me! I will not have you taught by a psalm-singing hypocrite that calls me murderer.
Yes, Father.
As for you, Glennie, see yon stone is gone within the week, or I'll have it flung in pieces outside the wall.
Mr. Maskew, if you dishonor so the graveyard...
Dare you threaten me? Take that, for an unmannerly parson. Good day to you, sir. Come, Grace.
Grace came no more to our little school after that, though I did not forget her. Sometimes I would go to the churchyard and sit on the flat top of a raised stone tomb there and muse alone and think of her. It was on one such afternoon in February that I heard a rumbling and a crumbling, and found that the drain of the land after the floods had opened a crack beneath this tomb. A foot or more across it was. I could not resist a chance to get down into it and see whither it led.
A passage.
It sloped gently down in the direction of the church, not mouldy and cobwebbed, a well-used thoroughfare.
It surely leads to Blackbeard's hoard. I must come back here tonight and see.
Look at the state of you, boy.
I'm sorry, I was...
Such loafing and wild ways. I will not have you out again this evening. No, nor any other evening after dusk. Bed is the place for youth when night falls.
I was for giving her a kiss, but she made as if she did not see me and turned away. So we went upstairs, each to our own room, and I never kissed Aunt Jane again. When I was sure she slept, I took a candle and the tinderbox and crept out of the house. At the churchyard, my courage waned somewhat. I half expected to find a tall figure, hairy and evil-eyed, springing from the shadow of the church. But I resolved to get back into the hole and search for Blackbeard's diamond.
For Mr. Glennie, a new boat for Ratsey, and marry Grace Maskew.
Some 20 yards in, I came upon a stone wall broken through to make a ragged doorway into a large room.
The Mahoon vault!
All around the sides were stone shelves for the coffins of the Mahoons. And in the middle were stacked scores of casks and kegs. The smugglers. So it was casks and not coffins which frightened us in church. It was a sad thing to be cabined with so many dead men, and I soon wished I had not come at all.
too frightened there to take it.
Smugglers.
All right, a bit.
There was a great wooden coffin by itself on a shelf, a full 6 feet from the ground, and space between it and the wall. So I squeezed my body betwixt wall and coffin, with a thin and rotten plank between the dead man and me. A glow of torches came down the passage, reddening and flickering on the roof above.
All right, there, we'll go on with the four chaps for that brush with the elector.
Right, the master's driven down a torture to get at the church.
I'll give him a pistol's mouth look down, spoil his face for him.
No. None shall lay hand on Maskew but I. When his day of reckoning comes, 'tis I will reckon with him.
Here with that funnel, Parmiter. Good liquor to pour into these casks.
Hast thou not seen that boy of Trenchard wandering in the churchyard?
I did today, sundown, sitting on the very tomb top.
Well, I fear he sits there to play the spy and tell Maskew what he sees.
Not him. He has also a scare of meeting Blackbeard.
He is a brave lad. I would he were my son. He'll make a good sailor later on.
No doubt he will, Elsin. Yeah.
Now, lads, glass is full for a toast. Here's the Blackbeard. Father Blackbeard, who watches over our treasure better than he ever did over his own.
Blackbeard. Blackbeard.
So the meeting broke up, and the torchlight died away as it had come, in a red flicker on the roof. And the vault was left to dead men, and to me. I clambered across the great coffin to the narrow ledge of the stone shelf. As I fell, my hand went through the rotten shell of the coffin, and I was holding a wisp of seaweed or a handful of funeral trappings. No. Not seaweed. Something black and wiry, kept together with a thin tissue of dried skin.
This man's beard.
I had, all that time, lain cheek by jowl with Blackbeard himself. And yet was it not chance that had placed my hand upon his beard? Wouldn't finding his coffin help me to his treasure? So I buckled to the distasteful work of rummaging the coffin. The man inside was little short of a giant. The clutch I'd made had torn away his chin band and let the lower jaw drop on the breastbone.
Why, what's this? A chain and locket. The diamond. I found it. Oh, let's see. Nothing.
No diamond, nor any other jewel. Just a piece of folded paper.
Maybe this gives directions for the finding of the treasure. The days of our age are 80 years and 10. Why, these verses from the Psalms. Psalm 90:21. Verses and numbers. These lead to no diamond. He meant these as a charm to keep the evil spirits away.
5 verses, each with number of psalm and verse. I was disappointed enough, but hung the locket about my neck. If 'twas strong enough to keep evil from Blackbeard, 'twould also be strong enough to keep Blackbeard from me.
So, farewell, Blackbeard. And farewell to great hopes.
I was to leave the vault no richer than I entered it. Or so I thought. But when I came to the end of the passage, I found that the hole was stopped and there was no way out. They had put a heavy slab against it and piled earth on top.
No, I must be out of here. Oh, Ratsy, for the Lord's sake, get me out of here. Ratsy! Ratsy, for the love of God, help me! Help! Ratsy! Ratsy, no!
Here, lad, you drink this.
Elsevier, I have not come to spy. I swear it.
Lie still. There's none here will hurt thee.
But how?
Nah, 'twas Parson Glennie missed thee first, so
goes to ask for thee at thy aunt's.
Then where is she?
Oh, I'm sorry, John. She wouldn't listen and bangs the door in his face. And then Sam Tewksbury comes here begging for a glass of rum to calm his shakes for the screams and wailings coming from the churchyard. Blackbeard, says he.
No, Blackbeard, Master Black.
No, not Blackbeard, no. I knew it then, for that's how Cracky Jones met his end, trapped in the vault. So Ratsey and I went straight to find thee. And, well, here thou art, David's room, and here thou canst stay till thou hast strength enough to get about.
Oh, and what dost thou seek here?
I've been ill, Aunt Jane. I came as soon
as... I want no tavern loungers in this house. If you like the wine not so well, you may go back there for all I care.
John? John, where are you, Z?
She's turned me out.
Hmm?
She wants no more of me.
Oh, why is she so?
I have no home, Elsevier. No home. And all the time I lay here sick, she did not even ask after me. What am I to do?
You don't fret thyself. There's plenty here for both of us. You listen to me, lad. Chance led me to save thy life. A boy. Like David. Thou shalt have his place. Thy home is here now.
I grew to like Elzevir well, finding his grimness was but on the outside, and that never was a kinder man. And then, one evening in March, when the days were lengthening fast...
John? I fit that candle yet? Bayless here. Huh. Boy, what hast thou there?
It is Blackbeard's locket. I found it in the vault.
Blackbeard? Yeah. Let me see.
I thought it would lead me to his treasure, but it only has verses in it.
Oh, yeah. But let not the water flood drown me, neither let the deep swallow me up.
And numbers of the Psalms, see?
Hmm?
So he wore it for a charm, as I do now. Unless it be cold. Dost thou think so, Elsevier?
Oh, no. John, 'tis for comfort no more, surely.
Aye. I have the candle here, Elsevier.
Mm-hmm.
I went to my aunt's to borrow one of her winter candles.
Oh,
it's here.
Good lad.
What's it for?
Well, the bailiff's come to renew the lease for the wine art. Open to the highest bidder. There's been but one these many years, and each of them named Block. So one bidder is the highest bidder. Master Bailiff, through here.
I still don't see why a candle's needed.
Ah! Here you are.
I'm through. Come through, sir. Now, then, John, set it on the table there, and we put this scarf pin in it, an inch from the top, and we light it. So.
All this to renew a lease?
'Tis the proper way, lad. I ask for bids while the pin holds firm. When a pin drops, why, lease goes to the last bidder.
Though there's only one.
That's the proper way, John. That's the way to keep our own. So, I bid £12 for the year.
£12. It's recorded.
We take something to eat while we wait, sir. There's
what?
Rabbit pie, piece of blue vinny, and...
Mr. Maskey.
Good day to you, sir.
I did not think to see thee here.
Well, I am here, bailiff, as I'm entitled to be.
Not at this table, mask. You sit where they laid out my son, thou shalt not.
Tay-tay, sir. Let's have no brawling here.
Not at this table.
I care not. It suits me to stand.
End of business. Pin has another minute's old, and then I must be...
I offer £13 for the inn.
What?
It was clear enough.
Mr. Maskew, sir, I warn you not to trouble.
£13, sir. Set it down.
£20.
And 21.
What? Are you mad, sirs? Elsevier, this gentleman will have the place at any price. I can give Eda Mermaid a Bridport with 10 times it.
My family have held this inn, father and son, for generations, so thou must now scratch down £30, Master Bailiff. £30.
So the tallow melted and Elsevier was fighting for his home. His home. And had he not made it mine too? Were we both to be made outcast to please the spite of this mean little man?
There, sir. The bin falls.
It does not. It is held by the point. Look, £190.
No,
£200.
I congratulate you, Mr. Maskew. You're the landlord of the poorest pothouse in the district at £200 a year.
Oh, you bugger.
Keep back, Elsevier. There's no need for that. The lease is, but I can...
Then I'll thank you to make it out to me now. And on May Day, place me in possession.
Elsevier is a good man. It grieves me to think of him in such a case.
And yet he's fixed, Grace. There's but a fortnight left before he's cut adrift.
Can you? It's your home, too. I can't think why Father should choose...
No.
He's gone out. Not half an hour ago.
I know. Oh, I sat in the woods, hoping that he would. And that I might see thee take this path in thy hood and with a basket for wildflowers. Oh, but Grace, where has he gone? To talk with the revenue, I warrant.
He does not tell me where he goes.
They say so in Moonfleet.
If you must know, ask him. I don't like what he does. You know I don't. But you mustn't ask me to speak against him. He's my father, John. My father.
I'm sorry. And I'm a fool to talk of this. When there are matters dearer to my heart.
John, the locket that you showed me. Wear it for a charm, to keep you safe. Don't think of Blackbeard's treasure. It will not lead to any good.
I'll wear it, Grace, and think on thee. The other night, when we were coming back from fishing, I saw a candle burning in thy room, and like to look on it.
Then I shall keep it burning there at night. A leading light for boats at sea.
She did keep a candle burning at her window after that. And others saw it too and used it. Maskew's match, they called it. Though they thought it was Maskew himself, sitting up all night to pore over ledges and add up his fortune.
I think thou art right, John. Maskew's on the prowl to the excise.
Which means we cannot store cargo in the vault.
Oh, no. Not yet a while. Nor land the stuff on Moonfleet Beach. And the Bonaventure is out there waiting.
Then what's to be done?
Well, I sent word to her to make up the channel to a strip of shingle beneath Oared. We used that spot before the passage to the vault was dug.
And is there a place to store there?
Aye. A worked out quarry called Pyegrove's Hole. It's choked with brambles and will shelter 100 kegs.
What was that?
What?
I heard something.
Hmm?
At the door. Nothing. And nothing in the street. I could have sworn the latch fell.
'Tis so cold as chilled thy heart and made thee timid of that skulking rascal Maskew. Now, to bed, for we shall get little sleep in a night or two.
Yes, he did go out. The night was fine, he said, and he must needs warm.
Fine, but it was sharp and chill.
It's what he said. You go with Elsevier tomorrow.
I do.
You will be careful, John.
I have my charm and thoughts of thee to keep me safe.
What's to become of you when the month is up?
Elzevir says he has something put snug away in Dorchester, and we must seek shelter elsewhere. We have, as you know, some business to attend to first. Then we must be gone.
And shall I see you again, John?
That same evening, we set out to walk the 15 miles to Horehead, where the Bonaventure lay.
See that rise before us, John? That's our end. 80 fathoms or more above the water and a great sheer of chalk on the seaward side.
Then how are we to manage kegs?
Oh, there's a ledge three parts down. The undercliff. We take the path down to it just here.
Elzevir, John, you find us ready, lad.
Good night for the work, Ratsy.
And then thou must leave Moonfleet. Well, I would fain flip myself.
That's it. And out the strand. No more noise than is needful.
Down on the shingle, we made a line to the waiting boat, and all fell to the business of landing. It must have been 3 o'clock before the Bonaventure's boats were off again to sea, and we were foiling away from the beach up to the undercliff.
Elzevir, there, among the brambles.
Spies, we're watched.
Hold in there, take hold.
No, for the Lord's sake.
That face, John.
I saw, and much as I hated the sight of it, I had a horrible dread of what was to come.
Let go of me, you scoundrel!
Shall have our club to make him pay.
I ask you, or hang.
Look out there! He has a pistol!
Give me that here!
You put a pistol down, man. Let it go. Not many hands on him, but I. For is he not sealed to me with my son's blood? Bind a man in foot and go your ways. There's no time to lose, Ratsy. The light grows apace. Bind him and leave him to me.
Maskew's hands were tight behind his back, and he was set against a great block of weather-worn stone half buried in the turf. Then all were winding up the bridle path, horses and men.
Unloose me, villain, or I will have you gibbeted on this cliff top.
I will neither hang nor see men hanged again. I recall how thou watched the flame burn down till the pin dropped and gave thee the right to turn me from my old home. This morning, thou shalt watch that flame again.
No.
I'll give thee one more inch of candle, and when the pin drops...
Maskew was a sorry sight enough, his hair awry and one cheek muddied. Yet there was something of grace present in his face, even battered as it was, as if she looked at me behind his eyes.
Would you rob a young girl of her only help? Would you have them bring me back to her a bloody corpse?
No, my son brought back to me a bloody corpse. Whose pistol was it flashed in his face and took his life away?
No, Elsie.
Now let it be, John. Now, it's the warm heart, and see, with that I like thee, but there's no way out. His life lies in the scale against the lives of all our men. Yes, and thy life, too.
But he's tied up, Elzevir. This is not
let
the way.
Let go of me! They left him here, knowing I should take account of it.
No, Master Block, no. I shall leave Moonfleet.
Oh, indeed. The pin is drooping, Maskew.
You may have £1,000. 5,000.
Make thy peace with God, attorney.
No!
You keep out of this! John, what hast thou done?
He spoiled your chance, Block.
Down there! Beyond the cliff!
The soldiers! On the cliff top.
Defeated, Block. You are defeated.
We're lost. But if we die, this traitor shall go before us.
Shoot! Shoot in the devil's name before he brains me!
Ah! You!
Leave him! John! Run for the cliff side!
They killed
him! Get close in, they cannot touch thee!
I am on my knees like a bullock felled by a poleaxe, a scorching pain in my left foot. Elzevir picks me up like a child. We press close against the cliff, safe, but for how short a time?
Canst thou stand?
No! There's something gone in my leg.
No way up! They'll still be there!
They'll be on us soon.
And find us with a discharge pistol and a shot man at our feet.
There's a way we might yet try. At the end of this ledge, a sheep track leading up the cliff, a zigzag. But with a wounded bird like thee.
Dear Master Elzevir, let us get to it. Better far to die upon the rocks than have them hail us off to dance on air at Dorchester jail.
Aye. All right, then. I'll carry thee. Oh. Where there's no room, I must down on hands and knees.
Oh.
Tail like foot. Oh. Come on.
As we slunk along close to the cliffside, I saw Maskew lying with his face turned up to the morning sky, a little red hole in the middle of his forehead, and a thread of blood that trickled off onto the turf.
Oh, I must stop, John. This is no easy matter.
Elzevir, make thy own way forward.
No.
Leave me. They might have mercy on the boy.
They will not. And it's too late now to change counsel. If we should gain the cliff top, we shall have an hour's start on them.
Oh, but to climb this track, burdened with a full-grown lad.
No, I must creep round this corner on hands and knees.
Oh, but Elzevir.
Press close to the cliff and keep thy eyes fixed on the chalk wall.
The ledge was scarce more than a foot wide, and ever so little Aline would dash me on the rocks below. So I crept on, but my foot was heavy and gave me fierce pain to drag it 10 short yards. Then I climbed upon his back, and on we moved another spell. When he set me down again, I relaxed care for a moment and looked down.
And close thine eyes.
Shut.
You count up numbers loud to me, that I may know thou art not turning faint.
1, 2, 3.
Keep moving.
4.
50 yards to go to win.
Elzevir, I can't.
There's no time to play the woman. Stay here, they'll pick us off like sitting gullimots. Students, they're down already. And they found Maskew. Come on.
All fright of falling left me in a moment, and I began to move forward again on hands and knees.
Brave lads. Look, they're moving off, down to the beach. Oh, we shall do it, John. We shall do it.
5 minutes later, he stepped onto the clifftop. Below us, the sea was tawny inshore, but purest blue outside, with a straight sun path across it, spangled and gleaming like a mackerel's back.
This leg of thine will keep us tied for weeks.
Where can we go?
I know hiding hole in Purbeck, Jacob's Pit. But 'tis 7 miles off, John. We can't rest yet. Come on.
At last we came to an old quarry at the back of Anvil Point, where a tunnel slanted deeply down into the earth, like a well turned askew, 70, perhaps 100 feet deep. Down these shafts, there led a narrow flight of steep-cut steps, with a slide of soapstone at the side, on which they once hauled blocks of Purbeck marble. So we passed through endless galleries cut in the solid rock.
Elzevir?
Hmm?
I heard it said the demons lurk down here.
Why, so they say. And worst of all is a man drive who lurks watching over the best of the marble. And Blackbeard haunts Moonfleet churchyard. No, let's not fear demons, lad. Here, let me sell thee down. There's an opening a little further up, see? Give some light. So, this must be thy home until they foot the sound again.
Will they seek us here, Elzevir?
Well, if they do, we can sell our lives so dear they'll not care to buy them.
There's a cold breath.
Huh?
A fresh salt smell.
Aye. We're near the sea. You rest now, child. Sleep.
And sleep I did. But it was the sleep of fever, which held me for 10 days or more. And all that time, Elzevir nursed me as tenderly as any mother.
What? What is it?
Tell me, I see what I brought thee here.
Grass?
And sorrel. Make a mash for thy leg. How does it?
It mends, I think.
Yeah, will you hold still while I bind it to thy leg? Tis now mid-May, and think ahead. I can get us a passage on the Bonaventure to St. Malo, perhaps, so I must go to Poole this afternoon to arrange things.
I should be well enough on my own.
Aye. The wind's southwesterly. We're in for a gale, I think.
Don't fret. Sea shan't reach me here.
Good lad. Thou shalt hear me whistle when I return. Should anyone else come, thou shalt hear them say, Prosper the Bonaventure.
Prosper the Bonaventure.
Aye, and so know that they be friends.
Night came on much sooner than usual, and before long I was lying in perfect darkness. I had food. Ratsey left it for us at one of the ruined cottages half a mile from the shaft. But I grew fearful of the loneliness, and began to think of the Mandrive, who leapt on people in the dark and strangled them. So I took out Blackbeard's locket to read the verses and so banish evil thoughts.
The days of our age are 80 years and 10. And though men be so strong... Who is it? Is someone there?
No! Oh, who goes there? Answer or I fire!
Prosper the Bonaventure!
Oh, Ratsy!
The devil take thee for a hot-headed young bantam to shoot thy best friend.
Why, Ratsy man, I did not hear thee call.
Oh, I caught my shin against a stone. Couldn't get that gibberish out. Oh. Dripping wet and half dead with this baffling wind. For God's sake, let us light a fire.
There's a price on thy head, John.
Oh, no.
£20. And 50 for Elzevir. A vagabond's about scurvy enough to try and earn it. So, I dare no longer bring thee food.
No? Well, Elsevier's gone to settle with the Bonaventure.
Aye, good. Though my heart is heavy, John, to think how all the old times are gone.
What do they say of Maskew, Ratsy? Do they know?
No one in Moonfleet doubted that Elsevier had sent him to his account, till the tale got abroad that he was killed by a stray shot from the soldiers.
And his daughter?
Ah, I'm sorriest for her. She grows pale as any lily. When they took the hue and cry papers to the manor house, she refused to sign. Said she never would believe that Block would attack a man in cold blood. And thee she knew for a trusty lad who would not stand by while others did such things.
Did she so?
Aye. And there was no mourner to see him home save her. They came, but not to mourn. To make jibes and show how much they hated him. And not a man would raise hand to lift the coffin.
Poor Grace.
Aye. But when they saw that fair girl bow down over her father's coffin, their hearts were moved. And first Tom Tewkesbury stepped out with a sheepish air. And then Garrett.
So he had fair burial, Ratsy?
Aye. Surely it is a fond thing to push our quarrels beyond the grave.
Aye. Surely.
Afterwards, she says to Tom through her tears, I thank you, sir, for your kindness. And she holds out her hand. And then she walked away by herself, and no one moved till she had left the churchyard gate, letting her pass out like a queen.
And so she is. A queen. So she is. And fairer than any queen to boot.
Aye, fair enough. Mayhap she'd make a match for thee, if she were not rich, and thou not poor, and an outlaw, and if she would have thee. Boy, what's this, son?
Oh, scripture verses. I was reading them to keep off the loneliness of this place.
Good verses enough, but they won't keep off evil spirits.
Why not?
This wouldn't keep a flea from a black cat. Whoever wrote this cannot even give the right numbers. See here. The days of our age are 80 years and 10, and he writes Psalm 90:21.
Well?
That psalm hath not 20 verses in it, all told. This is the 10th verse. No, John, this won't keep evil spirits away.
When he'd gone, I took out the parchment again and my prayer book and sat down to study them. It was just as he'd said. The number of the psalm was right, but the verse wrong.
But if they don't stand for the verse, perhaps they mean the number of the word chosen. Let me see. The 21st word. Fourscore.
And there was the cipher read. Fourscore, feet, deep, well, north. But what did it mean? North well, or to the north of the well? The words went round and round in my head till I was tired and giddy.
Why, John, I might have put a cold pistol to thy head before thou stirred.
Elsevier, see what I found. The verses, look, these numbers point to words.
Oh, I'll lock it again.
Look, fourscore, beat, deep, well, north. That's the meaning.
I was. So I see, but what meaning?
I don't know. It points to a well. The treasure is in some well?
Oh, not in Moonfleet, lad. There's none so deep in Moonfleet.
Yet that's where Blackbeard ended his days. So if it means not Moonfleet...
Well, he had the jewel from the king himself when he had charge of him.
Aye, on the Isle of Wight.
At Carisbrook. The castle at Carisbrook. That well's 50 fathoms or more into the bowels of the chalk below.
So the diamond's there.
If it is, John, we shall find it. The Bonaventure comes for us a fortnight ends, but if thou art set to hunt this treasure up, well, let St. Malo be and make for Newport on the Isle of Wight. A fortnight, lad. A fortnight, and we shall see.
Waiting so long for the Bonaventure chafed us, but there was something else that vexed me and made me more unquiet with every day that passed. I had to see Grace again. When I took the courage to tell him this, Elsevier smiled and said if I was shot or taken off to jail, I must blame my own folly and not him.
Yes? Can I help?
I'm seeking an inn called the Why Not, miss.
The Why Not's been shut up these 2 months or more.
Grace. Tis I.
John.
Oh, Grace. It's good to see thee again.
John. I took you for some carter's lad dressed like that. Quick, come through to the summer house before you're discovered.
I told Grace all that had happened at her father's death, and she wept. But afterwards dried her tears, and must needs look at my leg to see the bullet wound, and if it was all soundly healed. Then I shared all my secrets with her.
And when I get the diamond, I shall come back the richest man in all the countryside.
John, set not your heart too much upon it, but just there for the taking.
It
will evilly come by, and will bring evil with it.
No.
Even Blackbeard would not spend it for himself, but meant to give it to the poor. If you do find it, John, set his soul at rest by doing what he meant to do. Or it'll bring a curse on you.
It'll bring happiness, Grace. For both of us.
It's past 5 o'clock. You must be gone. You may perhaps put into Moonfleet again?
I shall. Of course I shall.
I still keep the candle burning at my window. If you come to the beach on any night, you'll see it. And know Grace remembers you. And will think of you every night till you come back again.
Oh, Grace.
Go now. And have a care how you touch the treasure.
What she said of the treasure, I took to be no more than girlish fancy. But as I journeyed back to Elsevier, I had this thought to soothe me, that I had seen Grace, and that she was so kind to me.
Bonaventure doth prosper, John. Good breeze up channel. We shall reach the island by morning, I think.
Aye. And we shall prosper then.
Oh, John. Our dear Dorset coast. It gives me some pangs to see her slip away like this.
Aye. But we shall see her again, Elsevier. I know we shall.
Newport first, eh? And good friends of the contraband at the Bugle.
And Carisbrook. And Blackbeard's Diamond.
At daybreak, they put us ashore at Cowes. So we walked to Newport and came there before many were stirring. It is a little place enough, this Newport, and we soon found the Bugle.
Is any about serve two working men? Landlord?
Come in, come in.
We seek bed and victuals, friend.
We're full. It is a busy time. We've tried a week, Dave.
No doubt tis these fares that make things prosper.
Make what?
Prosper.
Prosper what?
Prosper the Bonaventure.
Elsa, I did not recognize you. Thou art most welcome. Most welcome.
So long as we stopped at the Bugle, we had the best of lodging and the choicest meat and drink. And all the while, the landlord treated Elsevier as though he were a prince. And so he was indeed, a prince among the smugglers.
Elsevier, what hast thou found? Can it be done?
It'll be no easy matter, John. The castle's used as a jail, full of French prisoners and guarded.
The well house, too?
Oh, aye, and always to the well house. And that well is so deep, they must use an ass on a treadwheel to hoist the buckets up. Now, I've tried to see if we can work this secretly, but 'tis not to be done without the help of the turnkey. He's a man I do not trust, but, well, I've been forced to tell him of the treasure.
To tell him, but...
No, not where it lies or how to get it. He'll let us search there for one-third the value of all we find.
So, when?
Tomorrow. We must be at the castle gates by 6 o'clock. We go as masons to plaster up a weak patch on the well side. So, he takes us straight in, John. To the very place where Blackbeard earned the wages of his misdeeds.
Good morning, Master Wellwright. You've brought ugly weather with you.
Just let us through, man.
Keeping a shifty face turned always away from us, he led us to a square building of stone with a high roof like a large dovecot.
You see, this beast needs no telling. He goes straight for the treadwheel by himself. Hold on there, we're not ready yet. Whoa! I'll lock us in before we start.
Why?
We're not no one to come upon us, do we, lad?
But it seemed to me he had us as his prisoners in a trap, and I began to like this business less and less.
I made a knot in a rope at 80 feet. When it's on a whirlip, we'll know we have the right depth. How does this wheel work?
That is clutch. When I push it, thus, the drum turns with the treadwheel.
Oh.
And this foot brake, see, makes it fast or slow, and stops it altogether.
Oh, you keep ready with that, and lower me gently.
You, Master? Is it not best if I do it? I'm lighter than thou.
No, that matters not.
But better I make the search, and thou stop here to help this gentleman.
Ah, well, perhaps.
The well is deep, lad. Thou shalt get giddy. Tis no child's play, this.
No, the lad is right. I stay up here. If thou art sure, John.
I am.
Then know what thou must face. If I drop this stone... That's how thou shalt sound when thou falls from thy perch.
I shan't fall, Master Turnkey. Let me climb in.
Here, boy. I got you.
Lad, I'm thinking of the zigzag when now was...
I have no broken leg to turn me silly now.
I'd rather lose all the diamonds in the world than not should come to thee.
Come on, gentlemen. Set the candle, boy, if thou art ready. Walk on.
The bucket began to sink into that dreadful depth, and the air grow chilly, till all was black as night but for my candle. Far overhead I could see the well mouth, white and round like a lustreless full moon.
What are you doing, eh? The rope's at its mark.
Aye, but I can see nothing.
It's this floor, then. Over the years it's been raised. Hold on. We'll try to lower down. Hold on.
Stop! Stop there!
The letter Y, scored in the brick. Blackbeard's mark. Have a care, John. The treasure was evilly come by. It will bring a curse with it.
Have you found nothing yet?
Thou shalt know when I have.
Soon, I had the mortar out of the joints, and the brick loose enough to prise it forward by putting the edge of the hammer in the crack. And there was a little bag, parched and dry, and dropping out of it into my hand, a pure crystal as big as a walnut, with a light of a thousand fires.
I found it! Pull me up!
I went up a great deal faster than I'd gone down, but before my head was level with the ground, the turnkey set the brake on and fixed me where I was.
Where is it, then? Give me the treasure.
Pull me up first.
Nay, lad. It is safer to give it me now. Are both hands free.
Well, let the boy up. Tis his treasure. He shall do with it as he likes.
It's not his treasure. No. Nor yours, either.
Why, man, what are you saying?
Listen. I'll give you half shares. This is nothing to do with the boy.
Yeah, that is share, or I'll know the reason why.
Ah, you shall. Your name is Block, and there's money on your head.
What?
So, you don't leave this room, except we hands tied and bound for the gallows, unless I first have the jewel safe in my purse.
That thou shalt not.
Hold it up. I'm
no, John.
We are have the Block and thy traitor.
Never.
Lord, save us.
His belt came loose in my hand, John. I could have saved him.
No, Elsevier. No man could. Oh,
the sound of it.
Let's fling the jewel down after him. It brings a curse
no.
with it.
No, you give it me. It is thy treasure, and I will never touch a penny of it. But fling it down the well, thou shalt not. This man has lost his life for it. And we've risked ours. Aye. And may lose him for it, too, perhaps. Oh, come on. We must get out of here.
We got back at the Bugle about 10 in the forenoon. Here were we a second time flying for our lives, and this flight was very bitter to me. It seemed to take me further still away from all my old happy life, and to stand like another dreadful obstacle between Grace and me.
John? Art thou sleeping?
No, I cannot.
Well, landlord tells me there's a Dutch cooper lying at Cowes, ready to make for Holland, freighted with wool.
We are to leave England.
Oh, we have little choice, lad. We can't stay here now. And the Low Countries will suit us well. I can make myself understood in the Dutch language. Besides, now we have this jewel, perhaps we can find some buyer for it in The Hague.
Thus, in the afternoon, we were on the road, making our way from Newport to Cowes in a new disguise. By 8, we found the cooper ready to make sail, waiting only for the tide to set out. Elsevier exchanged a few words with the captain and gave him a letter our landlord had written. After that, they let us come on board, but said nothing to us. I was so tired and heavy with sleep that my eyes closed almost at once and never opened till the next morning was well advanced. We reached The Hague and found that every other house dealt in stones.
Here's another. Look, Elsevier.
Well, we must find a tavern before we turn to dealing.
Oh, we're sure to get a good price, though, when they see how it flashes colours.
Now we're all for throwing it down the well, remember?
Aye, but we did the better thing by keeping it.
Did we so? I'm not so sure, John. Time spent gazing on it and turning it over in thy hands is...
But the wealth it'll bring us...
I tell thee, boy, I tire of it. I shall not touch it. Well, I would do well to set aside a part to build poorhouses as Blackbeard meant to. Now, a tavern first, then we seek our diamond buyer.
We found our lodging, and then spent some days in wandering round the town and making inquiries, till we came at last to the house of one Crispin Aldobrand. A wizened little man he was, with yellow skin and deep wrinkles. He led us to a room with heavy outer shutters.
Well, my sons, you must know I do not purchase sailor's flotsam. If it is some toy you have, then keep it to make brooches for your sweethearts.
No toy, your worship. This boy has a diamond he would sell.
Oh, out with it then. Let's see. What's your name, boy?
John Trenchard, sir. From Moonfleet in Dorset.
From Moonfleet in Dorset.
Well, what need to write it, sir?
And how did you come by this, John Trenchard? Well,
nay, we're not coming back questions and answers. That stone was fairly come by.
Softly, softly. All stones are fairly come by. Though this one is no stone at all, but glass.
What?
Or rather, paste, so we call it. Good paste. Perhaps the best I've seen.
No. A shot.
Take it not too hardly, son John. I can offer you 10 silver crowns.
Oh, hush, man, we come not to beg for silver crowns. You give it here. The devil take it.
Elsevier.
Ah, we're well quit of that.
Before you cursed fool, I offer 10 crowns and you fling it through my window.
Last be going, lad.
Go then, and a blight on you.
John!
A blight on you.
10 crowns? For a man's life, and I know not what. We're well quit of it.
But, Elsevier, to throw it away like
thou
that...
Thou saidst thyself there was a curse on the thing.
No, but...
We are well quit of it.
No, Elsevier, stop. We were fools to take his word. The stone is no sham. 'Tis a real diamond.
Oh, indeed.
Didst thou not see? When thou sent it into his garden, he was on his feet and shrieking.
Well... Like enough that's true, but it is gone now.
But I saw where it fell. Huh? Among the flowers. I know the very place.
Ever since we first scented treasure, luck has run against us.
But we were so close. If we just go back to see...
John, I've got money to be touched at need. When this mischief blows over, we can just...
Think of the poor houses, Elsevier. Lone arms houses we could build. If we just go back to look...
I knew well in my heart I never meant to do any such thing. Life is like a Y, Mr. Glennie said. There comes a time when two ways part, when a man must choose between the broad road and the narrow path. I guessed where I was walking, but could not give it up. And Elsevier, the stubbornest of men, was overborne by his great love to me, and yielded. So at 10 o'clock that night, we returned to Aldebrand's house, and scaled the wall by a side lane.
Yeah.
Look, Aldebrand's still up. There's a lamp at the window.
Keep watch, then. I know where to look.
Be quietly about it, lad. The sooner we're gone from here, the better.
There's a red flower. Ah, here. Wait. It was here. We knew it was.
Well, then fetch it up and be quick.
It's gone, Elsevier, it's gone. Oh, look, there, his footprint in the earth. Aldebrand was here before us.
Then let that be an end of it. 'Tis ruled we should not touch the stone.
He's stolen it away.
'Tis gone, so let's cry good riddance to it and be off.
No, I won't go till I've seen what's doing in that room. I can climb the balcony.
John!
It was no easy task to climb that balcony, yet I was driven to it. Elzevir followed, not for the diamond's sake, but mine. The heavy outer shutters were open, but the lattice wooden blinds were closed, and I found an opening in them.
Look, he sits there with my stone, queen of all the diamonds in the world.
One of it is. It's not for us. A minute more, he may come to close these shutters.
Let me go. Look, he goes to fetch a box to lock away my diamonds. He shall not have it.
Thief!
You're us, Master Aldebrand. We're no thieves.
Thief! Let him go, though. Trip wires to set off bells all over the house.
I care not for bells. I take back what is mine.
Let's go, Aldebrand. Take hold of him. No! How dare you! Back to the window by upstairs!
Is bitterer to me than wormwood, the memory of what followed. They cast us into a stone cell with little light and only foul straw to lie on. And if the fetters about my ankles galled my flesh, my spirit chafed 10 times more within those damp and dismal walls. Yet Elzevir never breathed a word of reproach for my willfulness. Aldebrand swore in court that we beat him within an ace of his life, and then took a true diamond of his own. Had we been Dutchmen, we should sure have hanged. As outlanders, we were sentenced to the galleys for life, and told to be grateful for the mercy of the court.
Tom!
Take your hands off me!
Your servant, Mr. Trenchard. I wish you a good day. Sir John Trenchard of Moonfleet in Bob.
Good day to you, Sir Aldebrand, liar and thief. And may the diamond bring you evil in this present life and damnation in that which is to come.
So we departed from our liberty and from all joys of life. We were fettered together with other prisoners in droves of 6, our wrists manacled to a long bar. Thus we marched a 10 days' journey to a place called Yaimagan, where a royal fortress was building. There, Elzevir was drafted to another squad, so I had no solace of any company but my own, and was driven to occupy my mind with the recollection of the past.
Run, John Trenchard, run! The school will start without
you. Chance, let me to save thy life. My home is here now.
I'll think of you every night till you come back again. Come back again.
Water and bread. Water and bread, lad. Take it. You'll have need of it this morning.
Why?
You'll see soon enough. Now eat, drink, then come with me.
What does thou want of me in here? Why all this fume and smoke?
Can't you see? The chair with iron bands, rods in the fire, the smell of burned meat.
Branding irons. No!
It is only a mark, lad. It will be healed and set in 3 months. Fix him in the chair. Keep still, boy, or it'll be the worse for you.
The branding iron they used was the first letter of Yaimagan, the black Y of the Mahoons. It was in the 10th year of our captivity that one morning, instead of marching us to work on the fortress, they handed us over to a party of soldiers. We were to take ship to the settlements of Java, where they used transported felons on the sugar farms. Trudging before me on the rough road, I saw a prisoner with white hair and bowed shoulders.
Elzevir?
Oh, John.
I scarcely knew thee.
Oh, aye, lad. I'm not as I was. Oh, it is good to see thee.
Keep silence there! March! Report ship tonight!
Is this what it comes to, Elsevier? To live and die a slave in the Dutch plantations? Because my blindness brought us to this pass.
Oh, no profit in blame, John. And we are together again.
Aye. In a foul pigsty of a hole bound for Java. And the hatch is shut on us. Where are we, do you think?
I cannot guess. Maybe off Ushant, maybe not so far.
It gets lively up above.
It'll get worse, I fear. Goes on like this, there'll be 20 slaves less to cut the cane in Java.
We'd been out a week, I think, when the ship began to plunge and labour heavily. The cover of the hatch was flung off, letting in a splash of salt water, and our jailer bent over the hatch and flung a key down into the oarlock right among us. The ship was foundering, and they were giving us a chance to save our lives and not drown like rats in a trap. We unlocked our chains and made for the ladder and the upper decks.
The crew's taken to the boats!
Look out!
We're on a lee shore! Dragged into land!
Can't see! Is it Cliff or land?
It's Cliff! Look! High above!
Oh, my God, Elsevier!
No.
The snout! Tis the snout! What? We're in Moonfleet Bay!
Moonfleet? Just move, please!
But a mile of death between us and home!
Oh, Johnny! I'm cold and sore down, aren't I? But I'd rather drown on Moonfleet Beach than live in some prison. Let's play the man and we'll make a fight for life. You take hold of the helm with me. We must run her. And for the beach. Hold on. Hold on for your life.
Helicopter, what a fear.
Look. A light. We must go after the next big wave runs back. You jump when I get the word.
Elsevier!
Goodbye, John. And God save us both. Take heart, lads.
There, friend, there. Don't stir thyself.
What? That fire. This is the why not?
Aye. So it is. That was sharp enough to catch the name. I'll tell thee all in time, but now...
Elsevier. Where is Elsevier?
What?
I pray thee, tell me where he is.
Who are you?
Do you not know me? Oh, Master Ratsey.
John.
John Trenchard.
Where is Elsevier? Friend, he's not been here since...
Oh, but 'twas he that landed with me.
That was Elsevier dragged thee through the surf. I saw one cast the rope we threw, but I could not see his face. He reached out a hand to thee.
Yes, our fingers touched.
Then thou wert swept down the beach again. Oh, brave heart he was, brave heart.
What, Ratsy? Tell me.
He left the rope, his own assured salvation, and strode into the very jaws of death to set thee on thy feet again. Then the undertow got hold of him.
No! I must find him, Ratsy.
The beach was strewn with wreckage, and the heaving water was covered with a floating mask of broken matchwood. I sat down at the top of the beach, head between hands, and face set out to sea.
John,
you will come in yet, Ratsy. All come to the beach at last.
It was midday, and a thin and watery sun was trying to get through before the first body was cast up. Afterwards, three others followed. Then...
It's him, Ratsy. It's Elsevier.
Between us, we drew him out of the running foam. I wrung the water from his hair, wiped his face, and, kneeling down there, kissed him. Seeing stones had been merciful to him. He showed neither bruise nor wound, but his face wore a look of great peace. We carried him up to the inn and laid him down on a trestle table, covering his face and body with a sail.
John.
What use is freedom to me now, Ratsy? My friend is gone.
John, here's Mr. Glennycomb.
Forgive me, I would not intrude.
No, 'tis right for thee to be here. I'll leave thee together.
They told me of your sorrow, John. I have brought my book, should you wish.
Aye, Mr. Glenny. That I do wish.
Then he took out a common prayer, reading the common Domus over the dead, and giving me spiritual comfort. And lastly, he fell to talking about the past, and I took some solace from that.
John, I must tell you, this letter I received near 8 years ago.
What is it, Mr. Glenny?
It's from a lawyer, Herr Roosten in The Hague. He writes that one Crispin Aldbrand, dealer in precious stones...
Him.
Being near his end, wished him to draw a will. He, Aldbrand I mean, said he once obtained a diamond without paying the proper price for it.
And so he did. For all that matters now.
Well, it seems he desired to make full restitution for this to John Trenchard of Moonfleet, and to beg forgiveness if he had wronged him in aught.
The will names me?
It does. He says that Aldbrand could get no sleep. He saw continually a tall man with a coppery face and black beard draw the bed curtains and mock him.
So, I am to be rich.
Indeed. But I pray you may be led to use it well, John.
Fear not that, Mr. Glenny. I've learned a bitter lesson over this. Bitter lesson.
It was midnight when he left me alone with my dead friend. Then I heard another step into the room, but did not turn till I felt a light touch on my shoulder.
John, have you forgotten me?
Grace.
Did you not see the light? I know there was a friend that waited for you. Have you forgotten?
No, dearest Grace. I have forgotten nothing.
Then may I not share your sorrow?
We are not what we were. Thou art a noble lady, and I'm a broken wretch.
No.
Yes. This iron ring on my wrist. This brand on my cheek.
It is the Mahoon's badge, John, to show that you are theirs and must do their bidding. John, have you no word for me? Do you not love me still?
All that great wealth came to my hands, though I never touched a penny piece, but laid it out in good works. I rebuilt the almshouses beyond all that Blackbeard could ever think of. Elzevir lies on the sunny side of the church, most faithful and most loved by me, with a text on his tombstone. Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friend. As for us, for Grace and me, we dwell in this our happy Moonfleet, content to see the dawn tipping the long cliff line with gold, while behind all is spread as a curtain the eternal sea, ever the same and ever changing. Yet I love to see it best when it is lashed to madness in the autumn gale, and to hear the grinding roar and churn of pebbles like a great organ playing all the night. 'Tis then I thank God that I am not fighting for my life on Moonfleet Beach. And more than once I stood in that same awful place and tried to save a struggling wretch, but never saw one come through the surf alive in such a night as he saved me. In Moonfleet by Jamie Faulkner, John Trenchard was played by Richard Pearce and Elzevir Block by James Lawrenson. Ratsey was Ron Cook, Grace Tilly Gaunt, and Maskew Stephen Boxer. Aldebrand was played by Sean Baker, the turnkey by Stephen Critchlow. Mr. Glennie by Ian Masters and Aunt Jane by Frances Jeter. The narrator was Robert Glenister. Moonfleet was dramatized by Nick Warburton and directed by Sally Avens.